content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jen Rogers for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is all about pets. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Vice.com, The New York Times, Dogster.com, if we have time, Catster.com. On today's program, we'll start with an article from Vice.com titled, Pets Can Make You Just as Happy as a Husband or Wife, by Paige Gawley. Pets really can replace the need for human interaction, as well as make their owners more conscientious than people who don't have pets. It's not in your imagination. Pets really do make you feel better. Pets increase life satisfaction and well-being similarly to that of family and friends, sometimes even working as a substitute to them, according to a UK study published in the Social Indicators Research Journal. The study, which looked at cats and dogs, found that a pet is worth $90,000 a year in life satisfaction. While life satisfaction is intangible, the rating is meant to provide a tangible figure in order to understand value. It essentially means that having a pet positively impacts a human as much as $90,000 would. The number is significant, as it's the same implicit price a person would get from hanging out with friends or family. Economist who penned Pet Studies speaks out. First, when I obtained the values, I was surprised. I was thinking that is a lot of money, even for me who loves pets. Says Adelina Gueschwander, the paper's co-author, told CNN. When she thought about it more, Gueschwander realized most people claim that their pets are like friends or family members. If pets are indeed like friends or family, why shouldn't that measure be comparable to talking to friends and family once a week? She questioned. You have your pet every day. In an interview with the Times, Gueschwander further commented on her research. I understand why some people might be skeptical, but other economists have previously calculated similar values for being able to meet with friends and family once or twice a week, she said. If you put it in that context, I think our findings make sense. Additionally, she hypothesized, I also suspect that many people don't actually realize how important their pets are for them. A study looked at 2,500 households in the UK. It didn't only compare and contrast non-pet households. Instead, the study used an instrumental variables approach to take into account factors like personality types to reach its conclusion. The authors found that have was linked to an increase in life satisfaction of 3 to 4 points on a scale that went from 1, completely dissatisfied, to 7, satisfied beyond measure. In addition to the life satisfaction score, the study found that pet carers in general appear to be more open, conscientious, and extroverted than non-pet givers. Next, we'll move on to Pet Theory from the New York Times by Emily Anthes. It's titled, Why Are Cats Such a Medical Black Box? When my husband and I took our cat to the vet early last year, we were hoping to hear that we had nothing to worry about. Olive, a long-haired tortoiseshell kitten who had been the runt of her litter, was naturally quiet and skittish, prone to hiding in closets and napping behind the shower curtain. That made her hard to read, and sometimes simply to find. But days earlier, we started wondering whether she might be sick. Did she seem to be even more reserved than usual? It was hard to say, but we decided to ask her vet just to be safe. The vet immediately noticed that Olive's gums were pale and that her heart was racing. A quick blood test revealed that she was severely anemic, with a blood cell volume so low, the vet said, it was incompatible with life. So began a months-long ordeal featuring repeated visits to the veterinary ICU, more than a dozen blood transfusions, and a few solid answers. Cats have been so understudied, says Eleanor Carlson, a geneticist at UMass Chan Medical School and the Broad Institute. They're going to remain a black box unless something changes on the research side. Dogs as the default. Over the last few decades, veterinary medicine has made enormous strides, allowing pets like Olive to receive highly advanced care. But feline medicine has lagged behind its canine counterpart, and it's not always easy to provide evidence-based medicine for cats. It's still considered a bit of a niche interest, says Dr. Karen Perry, a veterinary orthopedic surgeon with a focus on feline health at Michigan State University. Historically, many veterinarians essentially treated cats as small dogs, borrowing tests and treatments developed for canine patients to care for feline ones. Even in veterinary school, where students train for all sorts of specialties, dogs have long been the default. My anatomy book was Anatomy of the Dog, says Dr. Maggie Placer, the veterinary science program's manager at Every Cat Health Foundation. We had PowerPoints and supplements for the cats. Over time, however, it has become increasingly clear that what works for Rover may be worthless or worse for Tigger. Dogs and cats metabolize drugs differently, for instance, and some common canine drugs are toxic in cats. It's not unreasonable to assume that everything that works in a dog will work in a cat, says Dr. Bruce Kornreich, who directs the Cornell Feline Health Center. There's a lot we still need to learn. On some level, the longstanding focus on dogs was practical. Studies have shown that pet owners take dogs to the vet more often than they take cats. Is that because society simply places less value on the lives of cats than on dogs? Cats, after all, are far less likely to be working animals, and they're generally viewed as more independent and less sociable than dogs. Maybe there are biases against cats, Dr. Kornreich says. As a dog person who married a cat person and now has pets of both kinds, I do think that cats and the people who keep them tend to be derided or dismissed in ways that dogs aren't. But I don't think that fully explains why doting pet owners are less likely to seek care for their feline charges. Over the years, my husband and I have gone to great lengths to help all of our ailing pets. But taking the cats to vets was absolutely more stressful for them and for us than taking the dogs. And cats simply don't seem to need as much medical care. Maybe that was a true reflection of our reality. Our dogs regularly romped through Prospect Park in Brooklyn, swapped germs with playmates, and scarfed down rogue chicken bones while our cats lived cosseted indoor lives. Now, I suspect that we may have missed signs of illness in our cats. I had worried that we were overreacting when we took Olive to the vet for seeming maybe slightly sort of not herself. In fact, she was critically ill. Indeed, cats are talented at masking their symptoms, which may also present differently for those in dogs, expert told me. Our Riddith dogs often develop noticeable limps, which are easily spotted on walks. And while many arthritic cats show no obvious signs of lameness, Dr. Perry says, they might just jump onto the couch less often or seem crankier when being handled. Given that cats are sleeping so many hours a day, and owners are generally only around them for a few of those hours, it's much easier to not realize that your cat is gradually changing over time, Dr. Perry said. In retrospect, it seemed likely that Olive had been quietly declining for weeks. Eventually, vets concluded that her immune system was destroying her red blood cells, but they couldn't say what had triggered it or find a medication that helped. Finally, as somewhat of a last resort, an internist suggested that we consider removing Olive's enormous spleen, which was probably where her red blood cells were being destroyed. I emailed another veterinarian for a second opinion. Splenectomy is not the worst option, she wrote back, noting that it was established treatment for human patients with similar conditions. We just don't have data in vet med, she added, especially for cats. Getting curious about cats. The situation does seem to be improving, albeit slowly, experts said. Some vet schools are increasing their investment in feline health, and clinicians are trying to build stress-reducing, feline-friendly practices. And more scientists are probing the genetic and environmental causes of diseases in cats. Dr. Carlson has become known for her research on the dog genome, but she has always been a cat person at heart. Last year, she unveiled Darwin's Cats, a global community science project that aims to learn more about the genetic underpinnings of feline health and behavior. Focusing on cats did require some tweaks to the DNA collection process. Unlike dogs, cats tend to be highly reluctant saliva donors. Dr. Carlson and her colleagues have been investigating whether they could sequence a cat's genome using just a few strands of fur collected by a comb. So far, Dr. Carlson said in an email, the fur sequencing is working beautifully, and both the owners and the cats vastly prefer it. The resulting data could pave the way for a better understanding of how cats' bodies work and what to do when things go haywire. Dr. Carlson had firsthand experience with feline medical mysteries. Nearly a decade ago, she had a kitten who died after developing a rare autoimmune condition that caused anemia. Dr. Carlson still has the kitten's litter mate, who has some severe environmental allergies. I always wondered if they both might have inherited a predisposition to immune disorders, Dr. Carlson said. The vets can't really say much because there is so little information. Her story turned out to be eerily similar to our own. Olive, too, died just a few months after first falling ill. We never had the chance to weigh the pros and cons of an untested surgery. We had no real explanation for Olive's decline. But we did have Olive's littermate, Juniper, who seemed healthy and vigorous, although she, too, seemed to have environmental allergies. We jumped at the chance to enroll her in Darwin's cats. We also had a little clump of Olive's fur. A veterinarian had put it in a tiny glass jar after Olive died and given it to us as a keepsake. At the time, I hadn't known what to do with it or whether I even wanted to keep it, but I was too emotionally drained to protest and tucked it away in a drawer. Months later, I learned from Dr. Carlson's team was trying to extract DNA from feline fur samples, and I knew where the jar belonged. In October, I handed it over to the researchers. There was a good chance Olive's fur would never yield anything interesting or perhaps even usable. But it was also possible that there were answers in there, if only someone would look. Next, we'll move on to another article in the New York Times titled, Pets is the Rare Documentary for Children About Children, by Alyssa Wilkinson. The movie, directed by Bryce Dallas Howard, celebrates animals while planting a seed of interest in rescue operations. Most documentaries are not really aimed at children. The film world seems to think they are only interested in animated movies about, frequently, talking pets. If a documentary is for families, on the other hand, there's a good chance it involves wildlife. But Pets on Disney Plus remixes all of that. It's a documentary about the title subjects and their humans, aimed at and largely populated by children. Directed by Bryce Dallas Howard, it's a sweet-tempered film that celebrates the animals we love and seems to have a secondary purpose, too, to convince viewers to support and even develop a love for animal rescue. Howard approaches this by taking a kind of segmented approach. Adorable children give studio interviews about their pets, their names, their characteristics, the ways they seem to understand the children's emotions. They are interspersed with home videos, largely the kind of vertical ones you might catch on a social media feed, dogs doing tricks, cats smirking, pigs waddling around, and so on. And there's a series of mini-documentaries about people who work with animals, especially rescues or otherwise traumatized creatures. Among those subjects are Sterling Trap King Davis, a rapper who is contagiously enthusiastic cat guy, Rodney Stotts, a master falconer who dedicates his work to both birds and local children, and Shinobu Takahashi, who runs the no-kill shelter Dog Duka in Nagoya, Japan. I don't think anyone inclined to watch pets really needs convincing that animals are cool and that we should like them. But this focus on rescuing those that are, for whatever reason, in harm's way is rather lovely. And to Howard's credit, the theme is integrated seamlessly into the celebration of life alongside animals, which might broaden the viewership, but certainly will plant a seed of interest in youthful viewers. What struck me about the movie was an influence I have not often considered when thinking about documentaries. The segmented structure and varied style in Pets felt familiar, and about halfway through I realized I was thinking of Sesame Street, in which generations of kids have been raised. That show also had its own varied style and structure, broken up by different types of filmmaking, like interviews with children, fun kid on the street clips, and short documentaries about ordinary things that are somehow fascinating, including observational footage from factories that make crayons or saxophones. Kids are actually interested in the real world around them, the ordinary things they encounter, and curious about how everything works. Documentaries are good at feeding that curiosity, at giving children a peek into worlds they can't necessarily access on their own. Pets is engineered to make a child not just want a pet if they don't have one, but also want to find one that needs a home and some love. And in that way, Pets serves up both entertainment and something for its young audience to consider. Next, we'll move on to Dogster.com, and we'll start with an article titled, Ask Dr. Paola. Welcome to Ask Dr. Paola, where Dr. Paola Cuevas brings expert advice straight to our readers to understand their dog's health and well-being. Whether you're a new pet parent or a seasoned dog lover, Dr. Paola is here to provide answers to your most pressing questions. From nutrition tips and preventative care to troubleshooting common behavioral issues, Dr. Paola is ready to offer insights that will keep your furry friend happy and healthy. Stay tuned for expert guidance on a range of topics that matter most to you and your dog, so you can make informed decisions and provide the best possible care for your canine companion. Help! My dog has degenerative myelopathy. Dear Dr. Paola, Dallas was diagnosed with degenerative myelopathy almost a year ago. He's really starting to struggle with his back legs, and he's falling a lot. What can I do to help him? Barbara. Hi, Barbara. Thank you for reaching out and for caring so deeply for Dallas. Degenerative myelopathy, DM, is such a heartbreaking condition to witness as it slowly chips away at a dog's mobility while they remain mentally bright and engaged. It's incredibly difficult watching a beloved friend trapped in a body that's no longer cooperating. The good news is that there are ways you can support Dallas's quality of life and help him remain comfortable and active for as long as possible. At this stage, when weakness and falls become more frequent, assistive devices can make a significant difference. A well-fitted rear support harness allows you to help Dallas walk with more stability, especially when going outside for toileting or navigating slippery floors. Some dogs also benefit from using a wheelchair or cart, which helps them take the weight off their hind end and allows them to continue exploring the world with a bit of independence. There are also some do-it-yourself wheelchair projects online. Inside the house, yoga mats or rubber runners can create safe paths that minimize slipping. Physical therapy or hydrotherapy can help maintain muscle tone, support circulation, and slow down further decline, almost like physiotherapy for humans with spinal issues. Although there's no cure for DM, the goal now is to preserve comfort and dignity. You might also want to consider working with a veterinarian who offers integrative care, including acupuncture or laser therapy, as some dogs find these therapies helpful in maintaining strength and comfort. If you're ever uncertain and maintaining success, uncertain about how to best support Dallas day to day, a teletriage consultation can help guide decisions without requiring a trip to the clinic, especially if mobility is limited. You're clearly doing everything right to make his days brighter, and that love and your support and presence means more than anything to him. Thank you for being a loving pet parent. Sincerely, Dr. Paola. Help! My dog's food has been recalled. Hi, Dr. Paola. I've been buying carnivore dog food for a while for my dogs Emmy and Tassie from a seller in PA and recently off Amazon. No one notified us that these products were recalled. That is not right. We've been feeding our dogs this dog food along with their home-cooked meal. What are the health dangers that we now need to be aware of? Whose responsibility is it to notify buyers when dangers exist in any healthy foods made for humans and our dear fur babies? Should I throw out the latest bag of duck liver eggs and sprouted seeds? We live in a buyer beware world. I didn't see this coming. Donna. Hi, Donna. I completely understand your frustration and concern. When we choose a commercially available dog food, we expect transparency as safety, especially when it comes to our dog's well-being. Emmy and Tassie are lucky to have someone so proactive and tuned into their care. To my knowledge, Carnivore has never had a recall, and none have been reported by the FDA. That said, if you heard this from a reliable source, it's important to determine exactly why the product was pulled. Some recalls are precautionary, such as minor quality concerns, while others are based on confirmed risks due to potential contamination, like salmonella or mold, and with confirmed cases. The latter ones require immediate action, like pulling them off the shelves. In general, recalls are issued through coordination with the FDA, and manufacturers are expected to notify retailers, distributors, and ideally the public. Unfortunately, not all online retailers or third-party sellers are diligent in passing that information along, which can leave pet parents in the dark. When a recall is announced, particularly if there's any risk of illness, it's safest to stop feeding the affected product immediately and monitor your pets for any unusual signs such as vomiting, diarrhea, lethargy, or appetite changes. Even if Emmy and Tassie seem fine, it's a good idea to notify your veterinarian and keep the packaging or batch number handy in case follow-up testing is needed. As for responsibility, both the manufacturer and seller share the ethical obligation to notify consumers, but the reality is, especially in an online marketplace, that follow-through is often inconsistent. In cases like this, it's always safest to err on the side of caution and discontinue the food until you verify that the batch is not included in the recall. I encourage you to report any concerns directly to the FDA's Pet Food Complaint Portal. They do take consumer reports seriously, and your voice helps advocate not just for your dogs, but for others too. By the way, so Dogster also sends official recall alerts to your email. I hope this hurts. Helps. Sorry. Help, my dog obsessively licks his paws. Hi, Dr. Paola. My dog Morty obsessively licks his paws and me, especially my hands, arms, legs, and feet, He seems upset when I tell him to stop. Is this anxiety? Should I make him stop or just let him do it? Heather. Hi, Heather. Thank you for sharing this about Morty. It sounds like he's a very affectionate soul, but I understand how the constant licking can raise questions or even become overwhelming at times. When dogs repeatedly lick their paws or their humans, it's often more than just grooming or affection. It can be a sign of an underlying emotional or physical need. Licking can serve as a self-soothing behavior, similar to how some people bite their nails when anxious. If Morty seems distressed when you interrupt him, anxiety could certainly be playing a role. Separation-related stress, boredom, or even a history of reinforcement, where the licking may have once been rewarded with attention, can all contribute. However, it's also important to rule out physical causes. Paw licking in particular may stem from allergies, irritation, or discomfort. Dogs with environmental allergies often show signs through their skin and paws, and in some cases it becomes a cycle. Itch leads to licking, which leads to more irritation. If his paws look red, swollen, or strained from saliva, it's worth having your veterinarian examine him. Rather than scolding him, which can create confusion or add stress, try redirecting his energy in ways that meet his emotional and physical needs. For example, give him a puzzle toy, a frozen lick mat, or engage him in calm training sessions that use positive reinforcement. You're right to pause and wonder whether to allow the behavior or not, and the best path forward is usually one of compassionate redirection. If anxiety is expected but not extreme, a consultation through a teletriage service can guide you on simple supportive interventions before moving on to a full behavioral consult. You're already doing right by Morty by observing and asking the right questions. Sometimes our dogs communicate in licks and they can't say in words. Good luck, Dr. Paola. Another article from Dogster Weekly is The Velcro Dog Experience, Life with Coda the Shadow, by Dr. Karen Kanowski. Until a few months ago, I wasn't familiar with the term Velcro dog. I was aware of the concept, of course, the dog that sticks like glue and follows you everywhere like a shadow, but I hadn't heard that particular phrase. It's so cute. With Chihuahuas in the house, I would have expected that my Velcro dog would be of the teeny variety. And Ned, one of my Chihuahuas, is certainly pretty firmly attached to me. However, if the choice is between me and some food, I'm afraid I come a close second. I was also surprised when reading up on classic Velcro dog breeds that German Shepherds made the list. But I shouldn't have been, because I now realize that Coda, my Shepherd and Malinois, is 100% my Velcro dog. Coda's favorite things. Like most dogs, Coda's needs are relatively few, and it doesn't take much to make him happy. His favorite things include 1, me, 2, the hose, 3, his ball, 4, his food, 5, husband, 6, Ned and Fred, our other dogs. The irony? I was dead against getting him. We lost our gentle giant, Remus the Irish Wolfhound. We were left with a very sensible number of dogs. Poppy and Bailey the Labradors and our rescued Chihuahua Potato, Tate. However, husband insisted that we needed a 4th, wearing me down until Coda joined the family. Of course, I was right, and he has proven to be very hard work, particularly as his Malinois genes weren't disclosed when we first brought him home. Also, unsurprisingly, I have ended up with most of the work. While husband took on the role of primary disciplinarian and male leader, as the female leader of our pack, I have the distinct privilege of having something of a maternal place in his life, and Coda is definitely a mommy's boy. My shadow. No one likes to be alone, and in my house you never are. Closed doors are met with confusion and consternation, and even bathroom visits are not sacrosanct. We learn that if we need to keep the pets away, firmly latched doors and snacks are required, and most of the time it's easier to accept the company. My office doubles as our cat room, with a child gate to keep the dogs out, giving our felines somewhere to relax without fear of canine interference, and to keep Coda from sampling items from the litter box. However, during the day, the cats prefer to luxuriate in our bedroom as it gets the morning sun, and the wardrobe is apparently far superior to the feline furnishings I have kitted out their room with. As a result, Coda has taken to joining me in the office/cat sanctuary, positioning himself under my desk good, or behind the wheels of my chair, not so good. Permanently stuck in the on position. Even when we're relaxing in front of a TV or on the bed reading a book, if I so move an inch, Coda is up and ready to go wherever I might be headed. Sometimes it's to the kitchen, sometimes the bathroom, and sometimes I'm just scratching an itch. The combination of Velcro dog and guard dog instincts means that he is rarely in full relaxation mode, which explains why he sleeps quite soundly through the night. Fortunately, while Coda prefers to stay within licking distance of me, he's not overprotective and doesn't stop people or other dogs from approaching. In fact, I wouldn't even call him protective. Despite his fearsome appearance, he is far more likely to hide behind me in the event of attack than come to my rescue. Although he's the first to bark wildly at any person, animal, or leaf passing the window, the few times we have heard an actual worrying sound from outside, like when the neighbor's teenage son was locked out of the house or the rubbish bins blew over, he has literally wedged himself between me and the back of the sofa. So brave. Luckily for me, my Velcro dog, and I have Ned the Chihuahua to protect us. Next, we'll move on to an article from Catster, also by Dr. Karen Kanowski. Cat's life saved twice. Garbanzo gets a new lease on life. Every now and then, you come across a story that hits you right in the feels, and this week, that story is about a cat named Garbanzo and the dedicated foster carer who has saved her life twice. Rachel Robertson is the epitome of an animal lover. Working in the pet care industry, fostering young kittens, and looking after her own cats and dogs, most of whom are very elderly, have a special health requirements, or both, she doesn't get a lot of free time. However, when a local animal shelter reached out to her in early February to tell her that one of her former foster kitties had been brought into them, she didn't hesitate to take the call. Initially, she had hoped that the ginger cat had just managed to escape her home, but Garbanzo, Bonzo for short, had been surrendered by the person who had adopted her 4 years earlier. Even more distressing was the state she was in. At 25 pounds, Garbanzo was morbidly obese, her long coat was matted and smelly, and she was absolutely petrified, lashing out at any attempt to touch her, a far cry from the affectionate, confident young cat that Rachel had said goodbye to back in 2021. Garbanzo's distressing state. Initially, Garbanzo's owner blocked Rachel's attempts to contact her, but eventually reached out to explain what happened. Sometime after adopting Garbanzo, a man came onto the scene who apparently took pleasure in tormenting, possibly even harming the cat. After he eventually departed, a housemate came out with their own cat, resulting in Garbanzo suffering from stress-induced urinary issues. Rachel knew that her home, with various cats and dogs, was not going to be the right place for Garbanzo's rehabilitation, but fortunately, her ex-partner was able to help her out with some space in his home. Winning back trust, watching Garbanzo relaxing in the sunshine, luxuriating on her bed and demanding to be petted, you could almost forget that only 3 weeks ago she was borderline feral. Gaining back the trust of a cat that had been so severely let down by humans in the past is no easy feat. But not only has Bonzo become affectionate with Rachel, she also has become confident and friendly with new people, showing that she's almost ready to look for her forever home. In a slimmed down weight of 16 pounds, she will soon be having a dental procedure to sort out her gingivitis, putting her in top condition too. And now Garbanzo is up for adoption, looking for a their forever home. So you don't have to feel obligated to keep up with Garbanzo's social media, but we're sure that her fans would love it if you do. Please note that article was cut just for time because we've run out of time for today's episode for All About Pets. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jen Rogers, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. All About Pets is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. The number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. We'll be right back.